right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, June 16th, 2015. And this says, before the first cup with Jules here on UCY.TV, happy Tuesday. I can't believe we're back on the hamster wheel again. The weekends are never long enough, and the days just fly by. It is 67 degrees and overcast here in upstate New York. It looks like we had a good dose of rain all night long, and a storm front just passed through. Which, you know what, 67 and overcast isn't too bad, though it does make me feel like I want to get back into bed and take a nap. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show, and actually I wasn't that creative yesterday, so I was trying to get out of here. House votes to remove meat country of origin labels, and apparently only 18 people found that interesting. But I got to tell you, it's actually something that's very important and that we should be paying attention to. And that's what we're going to look at today. And we've been looking at some of this other crazy stuff going on. But there's this march toward globalization for our food. All of these never-before-seen weather-related incidences, as well as never-before-seen diseases that are going on, have been convincing the general populace that global warming, climate change, overpopulation is what's doing it all. And we better bow down because there won't be enough food to sustain us all. And we will have to take what is given to us. At least that's the way I see it. You know, we looked at the bird flu, and I think the number we came up with yesterday was 46 million turkeys and chickens have been culled so far in 21 states, I think, is what the story said yesterday. And eggs, right, they're now having all these issues with egg production, and they're talking about maybe having to import eggs from other countries. And how interesting is, we looked at the story about the House voting to remove the meat country of origin labeling yesterday. You know, it really seems to me that now that some of our livestock have been decimated in this country, our crops have been decimated because of drought and whatever other reason, never before seen viruses floating around, that, you know, the only way for us to survive is going to be to import from who the hell knows where. And hey, by the way, you don't need to know where your food comes from. I want to scroll down here. Because on top of the TPP and the TPIP and the fast tracking that they were trying to push through, that at least this round, the House voted it down, so we're not going to get the fast track. But remember, those international trade agreements are not public information, and we actually read a few days ago that they were actually classified, and there are only certain individuals that have clearance that can go into a secret room. I think that came out of Europe, one of the European countries, maybe it was France, that one lawmaker came out and started like spewing about these international trade agreements, and they only let certain people go into a room and read the documents in this room, and then they're not allowed to say anything about it. Well, on the heels of all this, we now have, and I mentioned yesterday, the Monsanto Protection Act and how it was voted down, and hey, it doesn't really matter because once these international trade agreements come into play, labeling and knowing where your food comes from and whether or not it has GMO or whether or not it's freaking Chinese chicken, you're not going to know about it. Well, check this out. After I got off the air yesterday, I had an email in my mailbox from Center for Food Safety. Tell Congress to protect your right to know. Oppose the DARC Act, which is apparently Monsanto Protection Act 2.0. It says Congressman Pompeo and his gang of big food bullies once again are trying to deny consumers our right to know what we are eating and feeding our families. The bill that would deny voters the right to pass state bills to label genetically engineered foods and make mandatory labeling at a federal level impossible has now been reintroduced into Congress despite hundreds of thousands of emails and phone calls from people like you opposing this corporate power grab. And that's exactly what it is. The corporations are trying to take control of the food supply, and you know, at some point when robots take all of our jobs and we're not earning money anymore or being productive members of society, whoops, you know, maybe you are the one who gets the cricket flower pill. It says, to make matters worse, Congressman Pompeo just released a dangerous new amendment to the DARK Act that would preempt any state or county law regulating genetic engineering crops, genetically engineered crops in any way. Pompeo's bill, which is H.R. 1599, dubbed the Denying Americans the Right to Know, or DARK Act, would, one, prevent states from adopting their own genetically engineered labeling laws. Two, prevent state or county laws regulating GE crops. Three, prevent the Food and Drug Administration from requiring companies to label GE ingredients. Instead, continue a failed 14-year voluntary labeling policy. And yes, we all know how well that works. And even if they label, I had found a... I don't remember what the name of the brand was. It was like a Mexican name, but it was these taco chips. I've stayed away from corn since I learned about genetically modified corn. We don't eat any corn products here. And I found these chips, nacho chips, I guess you'd call them, that had non-GMO on them. It was all packaged in like a brown paper bag, you know, written in like orange ink, I think, and was very excited that there was non-GE corn, and when I made tacos, we could have a couple corn chips with our tacos. Well, guess what? It ends up that those chips also had genetically modified ingredients in them as well. So you can't even necessarily trust the labels currently. And remember, too, you also have Monsanto, who we also talked about yesterday. Monsanto not only is trying to merge with Syngenta, but they are talking about changing their name and moving their corporate headquarters to the UK. So this is going to be great. Anyway, it says GE labeling is important to Americans, with over 90% consistently supporting transparency in the marketplace through mandatory GE labeling. And who the hell doesn't want to know what is in their food? In 2013 and 14, there were over 70 GE labeling bills introduced across 30 states, and laws were passed. We talked about Vermont yesterday. And I just saw, too, at the end of the show that I guess now those laws are being challenged in Vermont because, you know, those poor corporations, it makes it unfair for the corporations. If you label your food as no genetic modification, who's going to want to buy their products? That's a bunch of utter bullshit. It says there were also laws passed in Maine and Connecticut. The DARK Act would shut down these efforts and reverse the successfully passed bills, only to be replaced with undemocratic, hollow, voluntary labeling schemes. In the 14 years that the FDA has allowed companies to voluntarily label their GE food, a total of zero companies have done so. And yes, and we all know how much the FDA is looking out for yours and my well-being. It says, tell Congress to oppose the DARK Act and support mandatory GE food labeling. I thought I had seen somewhere in this email thread that it was being voted on the 18th. So today is the 16th. Definitely take a look at that. Look that up for me because I don't have time to do it right this second while I'm on air. It is H.R. Bill 1599. But take a look, call your senator, your congressman, anybody who wants to listen, and tell them you want labels on your food. And that's, you know, they cry about how it's going to cost more to put these GE labels on their food. It's all a bunch of crap. So anyway, yesterday when we looked at this labeling law that was removed, and I want to see quickly if we can find that story again. Hold the phone for 1 second. Da, 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 da. Here we go. Because I did a whole series of links after the show of stuff I didn't catch. House votes to remove country of origin labels on meat sold in the U.S. So now it's up in front of the Senate. Oh, yeah, this is the website that keeps trying to force me to subscribe or sign in. So I guess I can't read the Wall Street Journal story now. I read it yesterday, though. So I guess you're going to have to go back. But basically, what happens is it's between Canada, Mexico, and the United States. Canada and Mexico are saying that by putting country of origin labels on our meat, it's unfairly stacks the deck against them because nobody wants to buy foreign meat. They would rather have meat that comes from their country, and I wouldn't blame you at all. I know I don't want Chinese chicken. But we found out that they had filed a complaint with the World Trade Organization, and I believe it was like $3.4 or $3.8 billion in losses that they were claiming. Though there was no real accounting to that, and they were kind of questioning where that number came from. But they had filed a complaint with the World Trade Organization saying that, oh no, the United States is not playing fairly in the meat marketplace. And so the House folds and removes the law that required country of origin labeling. Well, sure than shit, I knew that Japan was pulling some of the same garbage as Canada and Mexico, and I had seen a few stories already between Japan and Taiwan where they were sneaking radioactive food into Taiwan, even though it had been banned. Well, also, apparently, it's in South Korea as well. So I found a story in my Fukushima news last night. South Korea and Japan holding talks over fishery import ban. Now we know that all that radioactive water is being dumped right into the ocean, and any of that fish that's caught off the coast there probably isn't something you want to be eating. Well, check this out. South Korea has agreed. So again, someone else bending over to globalization pressure. South Korea has agreed to hold talks with Japan next week over its import ban on Japanese fishery goods that follows Japan's nuclear accident, the Seoul government said on Monday. The bilateral talks will be held in Geneva on June 24th, with the possibility of being extended one day, according to the Ministry of Trade, Industry, and Energy. Here it comes. Da, 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 ding, ding. The move comes as Tokyo filed a formal complaint with the World Trade Organization last month against Seoul's import ban, to which the Seoul government has expressed regret. So, what is this now? You don't want to be buying poisonous foods from other countries. So, what are they going to do? They're going to go to the World Trade Organization and file a complaint to try to force you to put that food onto your marketplace. And then want compensatory damages? Like I said yesterday, this is very much like the way this TPP was, at least from what I understand from the leaks that came out from the secretive classified documents. That's exactly how it's going to work. That if a corporation was trying to get their product into your marketplace and they somehow felt that they were being unfairly treated, they would literally be able to sue you for compensatory damages. All right, back to the story. South Korea has banned imports of all fishery products from eight Japanese prefectures, including Fukushima, where 2011 earthquake and tsunami caused the meltdown of the nuclear reactors, making the worst nuclear accident since, they still say, since Chernobyl. Bullshit. Fukushima is way worse than Chernobyl. The import ban was imposed in September of 2013, so I guess they actually ate radioactive fish for about 2 years before they imposed the ban. September of 2013, after reports that massive amounts of radioactive materials and contaminated water from Fukushima were being dumped into the water surrounding Japan. Yeah, you know, that's been going on all along. 2013, I think it finally made the mainstream, but don't think that that wasn't happening long before that. Says if no settlement is reached within 60 days of the request, the complainant can ask for an establishment of a dispute settlement board. South Korea maintains that its import ban has been and is still legitimate and necessary to ensure the safety of its people. good for you, South Korea. At least they're trying to stand up for the safety of their people. We just let all that shit in and don't say anything about it and then try to get rid of any labeling laws. So you don't know where your food is coming from. Shut up and eat it. Says, quote, the government plans to actively deal with the issue raised by Japan based on the World Trade Organization Charter and other regulations. My light is still out here, so I'm having some light issues, but also I lost my good glasses. So now I'm in my bifocals, which makes me feel kind of dizzy at times. And reading is not always fun. All right, so just know that that is happening. Actually, let me get down because there were a few more things that I found after the show that I wanted to bring up to you. We had talked about the Chinese chicken, right? And that whole thing where they were talking about sending chickens to China to be culled and then processed and then sent back to the United States. Well, wait till you hear this one. Wait, where did it go? Chinese chicken. Here we go. Chinese chicken. Gotta love the chickens. This was from November of 2014, and I haven't seen much about this story at all since then. Chicken processed in China. And of course, it's all about the children. Chicken processed in China may soon appear on your child's lunch tray. Yes, gotta love government food. In August 2013, the USDA, who is tasked with keeping you safe, made the controversial announcement that it will allow four Chinese facilities to process poultry raised in the U.S., Canada, or Chile, and then export that cooked chicken back to the United States. Even worse, so they're going to cook it in China with all the pollution and who the hell knows what, and then ship it back. This development was deeply troubling to many advocates due to China's terrible food safety record. Yes, don't inject it with antifreeze. If you remember, that was the kids' toothpaste debacle that came out of China where antifreeze was cheaper than that sweetening agent that was very close to antifreeze. So they're putting antifreeze in children's toothpaste. I don't eat anything from China, okay? And maybe China's going to sue me, but hey, that's my thought. Anything that I can see looks anything like Chinese food, runaway screaming. I don't eat anything from China. This development was deeply troubling to many advocates due to China's terrible food safety record and the fact that, by admission of one of its own officials, China's food regulatory system is not yet on par with that of other developed nations, you think? China was required to provide the USDA with paperwork certifying these four facilities, and the USDA announced last week that this step has taken place. So that must have been the second week of November of 2014 they received that paperwork. Woo! I feel so much better now. Now, U.S. companies may begin at any time to use China for their poultry processing and or include Chinese processed chicken in products like soup, frozen entrees, chicken nuggets, and more. And you know, I always worried about chicken and soups, those little hunks that are from unidentifiable parts of chickens. I always thought to myself, I wonder if these are Chinese chicken parts. Well, it looks like you don't have to wonder anymore. While some reports have indicated, so how frightening, no wonder there's been no news on this since November of 2014, because it was ink stamped and it's happening at any time, it says, companies may begin to use Chinese chicken in their products. While some reports have indicated that American companies won't take advantage of this arrangement due to the 14,000-mile round trip involved. Yes, this is one of the things I was saying yesterday. Like, how fresh is the chicken going to be? And how could it possibly be cheaper than processing chickens here in the United States? But hey, don't worry about it because we just culled 46 million chickens. So we don't have any chickens to spare or eggs, and we're going to have to import this shit. I mean, tell me that this is not all a huge setup, because it's got to be. This, it's just so freaking perfect the way that this is all lining up right now that this cannot be accident. It says, while some reports have indicated that American companies won't take advantage of this arrangement due to the 14,000-mile round trip involved, My colleague, Nancy Huthengrath, and I reported last Saturday in Food Safety News that Chinese processing has already proven quite economical for American seafood suppliers, which already ship salmon and crab to China for filleting and deshelling to take advantage of China's lower slave labor costs. It didn't say slave labor. I added that. Hey, look out, people. Salmon and crab is already going to China and coming back again for processed products. Who would have thunk it? Says, our research finds the same labor cost differential for poultry workers, around $11 an hour for American poultry workers versus $1 to $2 an hour for their Chinese counterparts. Oh, I hear the big sucking sound as industry is being removed systematically day by day. There is no reason to believe, therefore, that some U.S. companies will not take advantage of this significant cost savings. Yeah, $10 an hour per worker? You better believe it. Look out, Chinese chicken. Consumers who wish to avoid Chinese processed chicken are out of luck. Since companies, guess what? I should have the trumpets. Companies will not be required to label where the processing took place if the processed chicken is further processed in this country. In other words, added to foods like soups, frozen entrees, or chicken nuggets. Worse still, as revealed in an exclusive lunch tray report last year, Chinese processed chicken can easily appear on school lunch trays despite the USDA's initial statement to the contrary. That means we may be exposing an especially vulnerable population, i.e. children, to potential food safety risks from China. Can you guys even believe this? It's already started, but hey, we didn't know because you don't deserve to know where your food came from. How real are those risks? China's recent food safety record includes infamous cases about widespread adulteration, such as, oh yes, I forgot about this one, the melamine tainted milk powder that sickened 300,000 children, and the more than $1 million worth of rat and other small mammal meat sold to Chinese consumers as lamb. Oh my God. I think Pigmine had a video on that, and there were like rats on skewers. I don't know, and maybe that wasn't this particular story, but I remember that rat story with the rats grilled on skewers. It was pretty disturbing. It says, and the poultry in particular has been at the center of recent food safety scandals in China, as the New York Times reported last week. Quote, earlier this year, a major meat supplier to McDonald's got caught up in a food scandal. Oh, yeah, I remember this one. After a Chinese television station broadcast a video showing workers in its Shanghai plant doctoring labels on chicken and beef products and scooping up meat that had fallen on the ground. Yeah, Pigmine did have that video. Falling on the ground. I think KFC was a part of that as well. And putting it back on the conveyor belts for processing. The country had also had frequent outbreaks of the deadly avian influenza. And that was another big issue. With all the avian flu that was happening over in China, why the hell would we be sending chickens over there? And how interesting now, in the very beginning, they were saying, oh, never before seen in this country, worst ever outbreak of avian flu. And originally they said that strain they had seen in China, but oh, it must be coming from the migratory birds that apparently fly between what? China and the United States every year? I don't know if they could do 14,000 miles. Anyway, back to this New York Times quote. The country has also had frequent outbreaks of deadly avian influenza, and the Food and Drug Administration attributed the deaths of more than 500 dogs and some cats to chicken jerky treats from China. Remember that one? That was a few years ago. Here are also some more troubling facts. One, the USDA's last audit of the four Chinese facilities in question was back in March of 2013, which was almost 2 years ago, and that was in this story from November of 2014. It's got to be over 3 years ago. Wait, no. What? March of 2013. So, all right, just over 2 1/3 years ago, which means that we are now relying on the Chinese government's assurances that nothing has changed at these plants in the interim. Number two, these four plants will not have on-site USDA inspectors to ensure the food safety standards are met on a regular basis. And number three, allowing China to process our chicken is widely viewed as just the first step toward allowing that country to import into the U.S. chickens raised and slaughtered in China. This may pose even greater food safety risk due to the widespread soil and water contamination in China. Zingo, that's what I said. Don't eat anything grown or raised in China. Language is currently under consideration in Congress for the inclusion in the 2015 spending bill, which would prevent the federal funding of Chinese processed chicken for school meals and other child nutrition programs. If you would like to support this effort, you can follow this link, which is at thelunchtray.com, and scroll down to find three easy steps to take, including joining 327,000 concerned people that have already signed this petition. So there you go, people. Chinese chicken is already potentially in the food chain, and you don't have to know about it because guess what? They're not required to label any of it, and there's no FDA or USDA inspections currently happening. Well, that makes me feel really safe. Glad we're paying these people and all these agencies to keep us safe. They're doing a damn good job. There was another story that I found after the show titled, Inspectors Struggle to Keep Up with Flood of Food Imports. The FDA physically inspects only 2% of food imports. Yes. Inside a giant warehouse past the labyrinth of cubicles and corner offices behind a security door marked authorized personnel only, the smell isn't all that bad today. But sometimes it is unbearable, said Denise Williams, a supervisor at the U.S. Food and Drug Administration Division of Import Operations in Southern California. The warehouse is one of several in Los Angeles where Williams and FDA inspectors spend their days sorting and inspecting thousands upon thousands of boxes that fill an area larger than 4 football fields. There's Cambodian rice by the ton, tapioca pearls from the Philippines, and tea biscuits and bean curds from China. Blah. The shipments were flagged for inspection as they came through in one of the 24 ports of entry in and around Los Angeles. More than 500,000 food shipments came through that district last year alone, making it one of the busiest in the U.S., and about 3,500 of them were refused entry because the food was contaminated with filth, pesticides, drug residues, or traces of salmonella. Some of it contained unsafe color additives or was mislabeled, and some was poisonous. Well, damn, and if that only is 2% of the food that's inspected, what's getting through that nobody's knowing anything about? In 2010, the FDA reported it refused nearly 16,000 food-related shipments out of one or more than 10 million that arrived in over 320 U.S. ports. Now, one of the things, too, that I was trying to find yesterday was some new rule that had gone through probably 6, 8, 10 months ago that had said that since these inspectors can't keep up with the inspection of imports, that they were putting the onus of food safety on the country of origin. And for countries like China and Indonesia, I don't feel very safe about that. Do you? Myriad critics, including the U.S. Government Accountability Office, said the FDA is simply not up to the task of ensuring food safety imports, which are entering this country in ever-growing numbers. The FDA expects 24 million shipments of FDA-regulated goods to pass through the nation's port of entry this year, up from only 6 million a decade ago. During that time, the number of FDA investigators has stayed the same at around 1,350 50 investigators. The agency began adding additional in 2009. And now they have about 1,800, still far short of the number required to keep up with 24 million shipments a year. In 2010, FDA inspectors physically examined 2.06% of all food-related imports. The agency expects only 1.59% of all food imports to be examined this year, and even less, 1.47% next year in 2015, which is now. Guys, nobody's watching the store. Nobody is watching the store. And as we're opening up all of these global trade agreements to allow shit to ship in from who the hell knows where, nobody's watching the store here. Now, we're going to talk about something that's kind of disturbing. I didn't know about this, but yes, I guess the smell test is something that happens more often than not. Says sensory test, the nose prepares to sniff his way down a my filet. Steve Anagold works out of a narrow lab at the FDA's new $40 million testing facility in Irvine, California. Good thing they spent all that money on a facility and not on employees. He is one of 25 FDA specialists across the country who rely on their senses of sight, touch, taste, and smell to detect decomposition or filth in foods. Yes, they are sniffing your food for safety. It's either a pass or fail, Angold said. Ocean grimy smells would be passing. Even stale or fishy odors would be passing. Maybe they need to get one of those, what was it called? From Colorado. The nasal ranger. They need a nasal ranger to start sniffing out imports. Look it up and then go to images on Google if you want to laugh your ass off. But it's not a joke. The nasal ranger will save us all. It says it's either a pass or fail. Ocean grimy smells would be passing. Even stale or fishy odors would be passing. But if the food smells like turnips or cabbage, it's probably spoiled, he said. The worst ones are fecal. Arnold continued. The fish just inches from his face. Some people refer to it as baby diapers. I don't have kids, so yeah, whatever. Reaching the tail, Angold laid the fish on the sterilized countertop. There's nothing wrong with this fish, he announced. It's pretty good. They call this organ oleptic testing, O-R-G-A-N-O-L-E-P-T-I-C, organoleptic testing, is one of several methods the FDA uses to determine the safety of food products. Others include chemical and microbiological tests, as well as tests to detect insects. A few doors down from Angold, entomologist John Sedwick places a sample of sugarcane under a microscope. See, now, I would think that they'd be doing things like chemical and microbiological tests and putting things under microscopes versus smelling them. But hey, what do I know? Anyway, the entomologist then moves his petri dish slowly under the lens until he spots black ants, some whole, some cut dead. Some cut in half, some dead, all among the particles of sugar. The FDA is tolerant of ants and other field insects that get mixed in with food prior to harvesting because they pose little threat to human health. Unless, of course, who knows, what if they were sprayed with pesticides? But again, hey, ants are good protein, and we'll talk about some good old bug protein coming to a dish near you. Investigators are uncertain. They can then consult with the Food Defect Action Levels, a manual that sets out exactly how many insect parts, larvae, or animal hairs are acceptable. And yes, I read about that in peanut butter. rat hairs and ant parts are allowed at a certain part per billion. Other things like blowfly maggots and cockroaches carry a whole host of foodborne pathogens such as bacteria and viruses as well as parasites. So there's a very low tolerance for those kind of insects. Well, thank God blowfly maggots and cockroaches aren't allowed in mass in our food. Entomologists also look for anything that a human would find repulsive or aesthetically displeasing. So shit, if it looks good, it should be good, right? I've had samples where I found rat hair, shrew hair, bat hair, beets, beetles, maggots, all in one sample, he said. Wow, this is going to make me not want to ever eat again. Those are the food products the FDA rejects, either ordering the food to be destroyed or returned to the country it came from. I think you should return it to the country it came from and charge them return shipping. Wow, this is such a long story. Do we continue? But it's good. It's disgusting. It's just in time for breakfast. At a warehouse in East Los Angeles, FDA investigators watched as 50 boxes of preserved bean curd from China were emptied into a grinding machine. This monstrously loud apparatus worked its way through 1,800 glass bottles, grinding the glass and spitting out a stream of chunky yellow ooze. The ooze is then collected, treated, and disposed of in the sewer system. Investigators had decided that the bottles of bean curds were improperly heat sealed and thus were susceptible to harmful bacteria like botulism, which can be fatal. So let's dump it into the sewer system. Wow. The case of bean curds was relatively straightforward. They had been flagged as a shipment as soon as they arrived in port, where they were sent directly to the FDA warehouse for testing, but that is not always how it happens. In order to avoid holding up commerce, food shipments are often allowed to proceed directly from a port to the importer, and then the FDA may decide to physically inspect a shipment only after it has been moved. But once food products are in the hands of the importer, there are more opportunities for fraud. To thwart investigators, importers may relabel a shipment. Yes, remember we even looked at that with the cancerous cow heads. They may relabel a shipment or swap out the original product for something more likely to pass FDA inspection. Guys, nobody's watching the store. We have to grow our own food. Eat local. I think that that is what this lesson is all about. I can't even believe how completely clusterfucky this all is. What are we paying these people for? I can't even get over that these people are all making federal salaries with federal benefits and federal pensions. And we got this half-baked job that's going on. And nobody, in reality, is keeping anybody safe. Sometimes importers mislabel products they know will get scrutiny, and they get clever. A section of Long Beach warehouse called the Museum houses hundreds of confiscated items that importers tried to ship in this country by calling them something other than what they were. What's that? What did I see the one time that came in? A shipment of bananas that was loaded with cocaine? Is that what they mean? The counterfeit Nike shoes piled on one table were labeled rice sticks, says Williams. And these will be passed to U.S. Customs and Border Protection, which might slap the importer with a fine. But FDA investigators admit that they can't catch every risky import. There is just too much to catch. You know, one of the other things, too, I wanted to mention back to the smell test. My friend would not believe me, and I'll find that really quick. My friend eats shrimp, and I had mentioned to her, sniff test, I had mentioned to her that I don't know about her, but I know I wouldn't be eating shrimp out of the Gulf, because I had found a story one time that the reason that Gulf shrimp was being passed as safe is because guess what? They're not doing any type of chemical testing on it. They're doing the sniff test, and yes, there is a sniff test right on NOAA's website, NOAA.gov, passing the sniff test in assessing Gulf Coast seafood. The nose knows. It says inside NOAA's Seafood Inspection Laboratory. So NOAA is also in charge of inspecting seafood. Who would have thunk it? NOAA, aren't they? They are. They're the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. What are they doing food safety for? Inside NOAA's Safety Inspection Laboratory in Pensacola, Mississippi, NOAA expert seafood assessors are training state personnel to use their sense of smell and taste to detect any unusual odors and flavors in Gulf Coast fish. Aromas that could indicate contamination by oil or dispersants from the Deep Water Horizon BP oil spill. So just know, any of that Gulf seafood is being sniff tested. It's just unbelievable. Let me get back to that. I don't know. This goes on and on and on. Let's look at the very bottom of the challenges. The Food Safety Modernization Act, passed earlier in 2014, gives the FDA a new mandate to make certain food is safe for U.S. consumers. Oh, yes, I'm sure that they're trying really hard, it sounds. Among the requirements are stricter rules for imported foods and more inspections. I also saw something that Obama was looking at merging the FDA and the USDA. Like, that's going to help anything. The law places more responsibility on food safety this is the story I was talking about. The law places more responsibility for food safety on who? The foreign food manufacturers. And it calls for the FDA to inspect at least 600 foreign food facilities within the next year and double those inspections every year for the next five. That would mean 19,200 foreign inspections in year number six. The FDA inspected only 354 foreign food establishments in 2010 and inspected 994 in 2011. But in its July report, the FDA said that the 2011 goal really might not be attainable. This is just unbelievable. Additional resources are unlikely as Congress cut spending in an effort to reduce the nation's debt. So Congress cut spending for food safety, but they jack up $1 million at a pop to give to foreign countries or vaccines or freaking bomb manufacturers. I can't even believe they cut spending. A measure in the U.S. House of Representatives would cut $285 million from the agency's budget in 2012, with the $35 million coming from food safety. Los Angeles District Director Alonza Cruz said the FDA has made major improvements over the past decade, including better communication and collaboration with other agencies such as the U.S. Customs and Border Patrol. And believe this one, a new computer system that is helping pinpoint which of the millions of shipments each year should be inspected. Why the hell would they not have some sort of scanner that does? I mean, they can send probes to Mars and scan in a stereo fashion with multiple probes, one on the ground and one on either side, scanning the entire planet to be able to determine every single chemical in the soil from orbit. So if they have technology like that, where the hell is that technology looking at what's in our food? There should be a database, an algorithm that shows all the typical chemicals that should be allowed in, a salmon fillet as part of the natural process, any type of the proteins and whatever's in there, and then scan the case of salmon. And if there are any anomalies, boop, it gets pulled out of the process of going to the importer. It's just unreal. All right, I'm running out of time very quickly, so that's the end of that story. I'll make sure I put all of these into the notes of the show once it pushes up to YouTube in about an hour. One of the other things I wanted to play was a clip. Since I haven't done any clips today, I don't think. I want to do a clip here again about some of this ag stuff. But remember, they're talking about egg prices going up and we're going to be importing. But wait until you hear. Don't think that these quote unquote food shortages or these massive storms that wipe out crops or now the droughts that haven't allowed farmers to plant or anything like that. Now we culled all these birds so we don't have eggs and now we got to import eggs. Oh my God. But listen to how this is affecting the rest of the food chain. This has got to be orchestrated. I'm telling you, this all is happening at the very same time.
Well, the impact of bird flu in the Midwest is now spreading across the country. Millions of hens have died, and that means a huge shortage of eggs. And, of course, that means, you know what, we'll be paying higher prices for eggs at the grocery store. The USDA is clearing the way for some imported eggs into our country, but will that be enough? They're attacked.
You know, and here's the thing. So they clear the way for imported eggs from the Netherlands. They mention here later, too, that, oh, they're talking about other countries as well. Freaking who knows? Chinese eggs. No, they don't say that, but who knows where they're going to come from. And as they're trying to get rid of labeling laws and passing international trade laws and you not having the right to know where your food comes from, you know, this is getting to be very dangerous. And, I mean, I don't even know what the rules are for eggs, but we just found out that Chinese chicken parts are allowed in your food, and they don't need to tell you. They're setting precedent for all of this stuff.
He is live in Chicago on egg duty. Garrett?
Yeah, Eric, this egg shortage is bad news for some of our favorite summer staples like ice cream. Just ask anyone who bakes. Eggs are used everywhere in cakes and pastries like these, as well as cookies, salad dressing, and even mayonnaise.
And you know, so here we go. Eggs are a staple, which are used in so many other food products. So, hey, easy way to make all the prices go up, to make any type of food out of any of our reaches.
And all of those things are going to be more expensive going forward, thanks in part to the worst outbreak of bird flu in U.S. history.
That's the worst ever.
Killed more than 47 million birds this year. Wholesale egg prices are already more than double what they were in April, and the USDA expects prices will continue to increase throughout the rest of the year.
So they doubled in 1 month, and they're going to go higher.
That's despite the agency announcing that it will allow imports from the Netherlands to help ease that void that is now there with all those chickens that have died. Canada is the only other country the U.S. allows egg imports from. Food producers are pushing for more countries to be allowed to import eggs, but a lot of bakers and food producers as a whole say that even that might not be enough.
It might not be enough to get eggs from other countries all over. We're pushing for more, but it may not be enough, people.
The issue is, of course, the added expense of importing eggs from overseas, you know, how they didn't come over, the air freight, fast cargo ship. All that adds to the cost.
Egg producers say it could take an additional 2 years to rebuild the supply there of egg-producing hens, and they say that those prices are going to stay high until that happens, and they're worried that the bird flu outbreak, it could come back again in the fall as birds start to work their way south again for the winter. So this story is far from over.
Man. Eric? I mean, you know what that means? We have to eat Lucky Charms.
We'll have to eat Lucky Charms. That's what it's going to come down to. But even better than Lucky Charms, here we go. Did I find a video? I don't think I did. I was looking really hard for a video, but I couldn't find one. But here we go. This is what's going to cure us all. 3D printers, of course. Here, wait, I got to kill Skype. 3D printers, of course, are all the rage. And they are working their way into the gourmet food market. Well, edible 3D printed treats made of crickets and dung beetles are here. I think that this is going to be the end result, guys. This is how the UN has been pushing how cricket meal is just so high protein, and it's going to help us with the global food shortages because there's just too many freaking people and there's not enough food. And now as we have these plagues spreading across the planet, and I'm surprised we haven't seen locusts yet this year, we're going to have to eat bugs. Says over the last couple of years, we have seen countless different objects 3D printed. We have also seen all sorts of materials used to print the objects, from plastics to titanium to wood composites and even to sugar and dough. But out of all of these, I would have to say that this recent material is probably the most eye-opening and stomach-churning. Crickets and dung beetles are what make up these delectable, highly nutritious treats. The insects have been crushed into a paste, then fed into a 3D printer, and extruded into these intricate, well-designed treats. Yes, pretty disgusting, but very nutritious, if you ask Susanna Soares of the London South Bank University, who feels that, quote, and listen to this, as the population grows, insects will be a solution to some food problems, unquote. So are we going to get our federally funded 3D home printer replicator like Star Trek, and then we can get our bug flower and make all of our food at home? I would say that that could be a potential future. Says maybe if you drown them in butter or barbecue sauce and tell people that they're meat snacks, you'll get some interested parties. Insects, especially crickets, are extremely high in protein. In a 100-gram serving of crushed cricket, it contains just a total of 121 calories while providing a whole 12.9 grams of protein and just 49.5 calories from fat. They are a bit high in carbs, though, so if you're looking to cut down on your figure, you may want to consider another insect. Oh, and wait, one more from Sky News. Insects can be turned into a flour paste and mixed with cream cheese before being spread by 3D printers. Oh, yum. Cricket cheesecake on the way. Using ground-up insects in a 3D printer, academics at London South Bank University believe finding a way to make bugs more palatable could be the answer to future food shortages. Insects have high protein content, which can make them excellent candidates for eco-eating. And remember, as they've been pushing this global warming Agenda 21 initiative, they've said already that cows are bad for the environment because they produce too much methane, and insects would be a solution. The same woman, scientist Susanna Soares, says, quote, insects seem the perfect match in terms of environmental impact. They are at the moment the most sustainable, yes, ding, ding, keyword, sustainable protein you can find. So there has been a lot of encouragement to look at insects or to at least try or taste them. The project turns to the readily available food source into a high-protein flour mixed with cream cheese. It turns into a paste, which then can be printed into patterns. We certainly know manufacturers of 3D printers are making quite big advances, and designer Dr. Keith Spears said that the industry foresaw every kitchen having a 3D printer alongside the microwave with the ability to print meals. There you go. Ding, ding, ding. And we don't see any reason why insects cannot be a part of that menu in the future. They said it. By 2050, according to the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, the world's population is estimated to reach 9.1 billion. And to feed that number, it says that world food production will need to rise by 70%, and food production in the developing world would need to double. But they say that advances in nanotechnology, yes, ding, 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 could be the key. By studying the minuscule structures of what we eat, scientists at the Leatherhead Food Research are already learning new ways to improve what we eat. head of food innovation, Wayne Moraleski, said nanotechnology is all about making the ingredients smaller. And if you can make the ingredients smaller, you can make them go further. So, for example, if you can make salt crystals smaller, then you need less salt in your food. So great. They're pushing bug protein and nanotechnology as the way to feed the exploding population of the future as robots take all of our jobs and farmers are out of business. Here, I guess we could end up with this.
A robot?
People are always asking me, are robots going to take our jobs? Well, first, let's start at the beginning. Pro-automation thinkers point out that from human civilization to the industrial era, pretty much everyone was a farmer. But today in America, less than 2% of our population are currently farmers or ranchers.
Now, that's a problem. Less than 2% are farmers. Gee. And technology did that, so let's get more technological.
Means that automation and technology have allowed us to grow vast amounts of food with just a few people. And folks who normally would have been farmers can be something else, like software engineers or video bloggers or robot ethicists. There's no reason for this trend to dry up in the future. In fact, we expect it will accelerate. Look at Amazon and their Kiva robots that move big packages around. Or the software that has replaced tax accountants every year. Or even robocalls, which can replace the need for human operators. And there's more on the horizon. Just imagine how autonomous cars could affect the trucking industry. Or even professional gamblers. There's this one program called Cepheus that allegedly can defeat any human player in a one-on-one game of Limit Texas Hold'em. But here's the point. Anything that we humans do to make money will one day be done by robots. Better?
Uh-oh, ding ding!
Cheaper. So if you ask me, are robots going to take our jobs away? The answer is actually really simple. It's yes, eventually they will. But there are other questions that I think are more important. In 2014, the Pew Research Center asked a group of experts in fields like economics, artificial intelligence, robotics, what they thought automation was going to do for the economy. Would automation eliminate more jobs than it created by the year 2025?
Yeah, and what a problem that's going to be, since none of us will have jobs or money to buy any of the high-priced food. All right, guys, the show's over. Make sure you stick around. It's Tuesday, so we have lots of live radio. We have Lonnie up next in place of Kevin Bland.